as to what it is that defines the malacha. We understand that it presumably has something to do with preparing ground for some purpose, but we see at least, say, three possibilities, and these possibilities mix and match in various ways. That there is a focus on softening the ground specifically. There is a broader focus on anything that improves the ground. We saw that phrase different ways. Yipui hakarka, as the Gemara has on Kuf Gimel, or Hanoyas hakarka, as the Gemara has, the Yerushalmi has. All of those being somewhat ambiguous phrases, because yipui is a very broad term, could mean make it look nicer, or can mean improve it. And the third element, the question of preparing for Zriya. And we saw that you could mix and match these in different ways, that it could be that softening the ground is specifically for the purpose of Zriya. Rashi at one point mentioned that. We weren't convinced that it was fully enough for him, but he did throw that in somewhere. And the idea of enhancing the ground, in addition to the ambiguity in the word Yipui or Hana, also could either be an independent act or could be for the purposes of Zriya. The Rambam is not 100% clear. There are other sources that put the Rambam in one camp or another. We didn't get into that in so much detail. But in other Rishonim, it does seem to be that they're taking that part of the Rambam, focusing on Yipui HaKarka, and going in one direction or the other. So we saw the Or Zarua and the Rebbeinu Hananel, the way the Eglei Tal understands, and he quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya that seemed to be emphasizing enhancing the karka specifically for the purposes of Zriya. While on the other hand, you have the Shita Laharan, who says that it's not about that, that anything that works on the karka, even not for the purposes of Zriya, but for inherent land purposes, is also considered to be related to and involved in Choresh. So then we discussed some of the issues that could come out of that. Among them, we discussed a question that the Eglei Tal asks on the Rambam, which we'll ask on Rashi rather, about why it is that it could be considered softening the ground in a relevant way if, for example, you're digging out that ground and getting rid of it. So we want to come back to that in a few minutes because it's relevant to something else. We also discussed how far we want to take the linkage between Zriya and Charisha in terms of one being preparatory for the other, one being necessary for the other. So what if, for example, you're dealing with land that is not arable, land that's not shayach for Zriya, etc., etc.? And what if it's not likely to have a Zriya because that's not what happens there? It's not set up that way. And maybe even further than that, maybe there's a connection between the malacha of Zriya and the malacha of Charisha. That we saw that possibility was raised by the Achronim such as the Menchas Chinuch and the Magen Avos, who want to link the malacha specifically. What was the case that prompted us towards that? Atzis Sheino Nakuv. So when it comes to Atzis Sheino Nakuv, so there is a interesting discussion, because those Achronim all assume that there was a machlokes in terms of Zoreya with an Atzis Sheino Nakuv. That was an open machlokes, where there continues to be different opinions. Not even intentional. Where there continues to be different opinions. But the one view was that Zoreya B'Atzis Sheino Nakuv is Hatter. Most likely. Why? Because that's shalok kederach. That's not considered to be a normal fashion of planting. So based on that, the Menchas Chinuch and the Magen Avos assumed that therefore a choresh done in that setting would also be pater. So we found that to be surprising. Not necessarily wrong, but surprising, because it links the two in a more powerful way. Because it's much easier to believe that choresh is related to Zriya in a physical sense. If we say there's no such thing as Charisha in a field in which you can't plant, you can accept that, okay, because maybe the definition of Charisha is preparing for planting or is doing an act that is related to planting. So you're going to be Choresh in an area where there's no possibility of planting. Okay, it's easy to accept that. It's not the only way of seeing Charisha, but it's easy to accept that that might be what Charisha is about. But if we connect it to a situation where it's
not just about the possibility of Zuriyah, but it's about the halachic reality of Zuriyah. That here, essentially, you could actually have any type of plants growing out of this pot. It doesn't have to be a small pot, it could be a big pot. You can have any type of plants growing out of this, and yet, maybe that's not called Charisha, what you're doing in this setting, because you happen to be putter from the Zuriyah component. That's not such an obvious point. That links the malachos in a much stronger way. And we started to say yesterday that we have to figure out why these malachos should be linked if generally we don't necessarily assume one malacha is going to be contingent on another malacha. So we mentioned two possibilities. One possibility is Siddur the Pots relationships, that maybe the first 11 malachos have a unique connection that other malachos don't have, which incidentally cuts both ways, because you could also say that that strengthens the question, because since we already know we have a chain here of 11 malachos, so why don't we link all of them together? Why don't we say that you're only over on Zareif, Talmanas, Farafiyah, essentially? Why don't we link them all together? So it's not really going to help us that much, but maybe that has some relevance to the overall story that they're part of the same grouping. There might be a slightly more likely possibility we also mentioned yesterday, is that maybe this has to do with a mechabe function. So, Shemed is supposed to have another share a few words about Elul.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rav Feldman. Shalom Aleichem. I apologize for coming in the middle, but you finished the sentence.
Absolutely.
Okay. We're standing now 10 days before Rosh Hashanah. That means that 2/3 of Elul have already gone by. If we were to go back a bit in time, well, maybe let's start where we are currently. If someone were to walk into the Mus Beis Medrash, or the Gluck Beis Medrash, or the Beis Medrash in Mira Yerushalayim, or even, let's say, the Brisker Kollel today, would he have any idea that it's Elul? Is there any difference between the Beis Medrash today and what it is in Sivan, what it is in Adar, what it is in Kislev? You should just know that less than 100 years ago, if you were to walk on a street in a shtetl in Europe, the same way that you could tell looking at a person, that it's Shabbos, that it's Yontif, from the way the person looks, that it's Purim, that it's Tisha B'Av, that practice probably you could do also in Washington Heights. But less than 100 years ago in Europe, you could walk on the street, see a Jew, and say it's Elul. It's simply looking at the face. You saw a person who was Chilul Ra'ada, a person who was just nervous, sweating. The question is, what happened? What happened in less than 100 years? So, of course, if everything else we regained, learning, Shmiras Mitzvahs, everything else, what happened to Elul? Rav Shalom Shvadron has a sefer on Elul, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The name of the sefer is called Dodi, very, very beautiful sefer. He says that when he was growing up as a child, the stories of his mother was during Chodesh Elul, she would tell him a bedtime story that the fish are quaking in the oceans. That was the bedtime story of Chodesh Elul. And therefore, you should also quake. And it would see there was a chinuch of quaking, a chinuch of hine yom hadin. So Rav Shalom wanted to explain that there is a unique koach that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave each and every one of us. A unique power. It's called koach hatziur. Sadi Yud Vav Resh, Koach HaTziur. That each and every one of us has the ability, in our mind's eye, to picture a situation and picture it with such clarity that we can live the situation. If we, next week, 10 days from now, were to have had a summons to a court on a traffic violation, we could sit here, close our eyes, picture ourselves in the court, in the courtroom, see the judge sitting in front of us. Think of what we're going to say to the judge when he asks us, why did we go through the red light? Do you have anything to say for yourself? Think of what the consequences could be in terms of may lose our wheels or whatever. And begin to sweat. we begin to sweat here in the classroom because of what's going to be 10 days from now, because we have a koach hatziur, it's real. If there were to be a coronation 10 days from now, or let's say a royal wedding, Kate and William are getting married 10 days from now, we could close our eyes, think of all of the pomp and circumstance, all of the carriages and the horses and the cathedrals, v'chule, v'chule, and feel excitement. V'haraya. Just a few months ago, the whole world wasn't the day of the wedding. It was the month before the wedding and the week before the wedding, and what is the bride's gown going to look like, and who's going to walk with her, and who's going to do this. Mamish, everyone's living it in their mind's eye. That's called koach hatziur. So the question is, we do have next week a court summons, and we do have next week a coronation. So what happened to our koach hatziur? Rav Yerucham, the mashgiach of the Mir Yeshiva in Europe, has a very, very powerful mashal where he compares two people, one person and a group of people. He compares Rachav to the Meraglim. Let's just go back a little bit in time. We have this woman Rachav in Yericho. Spies come from Yehoshua. She hides them on her roof. That's risking her life. These are enemy spies. If she were to be caught, then she'd be killed. Treachery. Right? It's treason. That's treason what she's doing. So why does she do it? Why does she risk her life for two people she doesn't know at all? So she tells the Meraglim, I'll tell you why. Because 40 years ago, I heard, this is Rachav speaking, 40 years ago I heard, Asher Hovish Hashem Elokeichem es Mei Yamsuf Lufnechem. I heard that 40 years ago, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a Kriyas Yamsuf. And that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring you into this land. 40 years ago I heard that. And so, Yadati Ki Hashem Natan Lachem Et Haaretz. I have a Koach Hatziur, says Rachav. I am certain, I am living my life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring you into Eretz Yisrael, because that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If he can be Korea the Yam, he can bring you into Eretz Yisrael. And so I'm not risking my life. I'm doing simply, I'm living according to my Koach Hatziur, my reality. Let's compare that to the Meraglim. The Meraglim went through Yam Suf. They walked through Yam Suf. They experienced it on their body. Not 40 years later, but a year and a half after they walked through Yam Suf, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we're now going to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Go. And they said, not us. No, Ki chazaku mimeno. We're not going. We're going back to Mitzrayim. We're not going. Rachav had a koach hatziur from hearing something 40 years ago. The Meraglim didn't have a koach hatziur, even though they experienced something a year and a half ago. That is also the bechira of man. Namely, man has a bechira to use his koach hatziur, or to live without a koach hatziur. That's our bechira. In less than 100 years, we have lost the koach hatziur of Rosh Hashanah. We've lost it. We don't feel it. I don't even know if I'm talking about it, if it's this, you know, if it makes one iota of a difference, because it's not the same. It's something which is floating. It's not something to us which is real, at least not now. It becomes real on Rosh Hashanah itself. I think all of us on Rosh Hashanah feel Yom HaDin. When the shofar blows, kilufnai v'lufnim dami. But the koach hatziur, being able to sit now and picture that it's a reality, that's something that we have to work on. That's our avodah elul. In Europe, that was the beginning point. They already had that koach hatziur, now let's move. We have to work on creating a koach hatziur. We have to work on feeling now that this is some, this is a reality. What happened to it? I don't know. It's hard to say. I spoke to someone a few minutes ago. He told me he's learning here and he has a job and he's doing this and he's doing that. We're very tired. We have so much. We have so many things. We're juggling so many things simultaneously. Who has time? So I said, what about Rosh Hashanah? He said, oh, my wife's preparing the menu. I said, I didn't ask about the menu for Rosh Hashanah. I said, what about Rosh Hashanah? Rabbi, I just want to get to Shabbos. We live day by day. So we have to work on ourselves to realize that there's no way that Rosh Hashanah can be meaningful to us without some degree of preparation. How are we going to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rosh Hashanah? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Melech, Hashem Molech, Hashem Yimloch, and today in Kriyat Shema, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokim. In other words, that we're saying it like we're 13 years old in the day school. There has to be a hachana. If we want to be makabel O Malchus Shemayim and Rosh Hashanah, it has to start now. Rosh Hashanah, there's a siman. One of the simanim, not just eating apple and honey, is not to be angry on Rosh Hashanah. It's a siman for the next year. How in the world are we not going to be angry for 48 hours if we don't start not being angry now? A person has to work on himself. Tikkun HaMidos isn't instant pudding. It's something one has to work on. Now we have to begin saying Birkas HaMazon B'Kavanah. It's going to help in our Rosh Hashanah. We're going to say, maybe it'll last for one meal. Four meals, you're going to say Birkas HaMazon B'Kavanah. If you start now, then it can already work. Namely, all of this we have to build into ourselves. I'd just like to maybe give you a mashal that will remind you of everything that I said. There's a mashal about a tailor. I heard this from Ron Eisman, who was a student once in the Kollel, now he's a Rav in Pesach. He has on the internet what he calls the short vort. Okay, so this was one of his short vorts. That there's a tailor. There's a tailor who has a reputation for being able to size up individuals, literally. Then we simply look at a person and say, you're a 37 long. You're a 42 regular. Right? In other words, you look at a person, doesn't have to use a tape measure at all. Fellow comes into a store, wants to buy a suit. Looks at the fellow, short, a bit heavy, says, 53 husky. So the fellow goes to the rack, takes two 53 husky suits, goes to the dressing room. After a few minutes, the tailor hears a scream from the back of the store. This fellow's yelling. Runs to the back of the store, fell. Who knows what happened? Fellow's standing there with his suit. The suit doesn't close at all. Like the jacket is like this. The sleeves are up to here on him. The pants go aleinu. In other words, he can't even pull them up. And so, what do you do to me? What do you do to me? You playing a game with me? Tammy didn't know what's going on. He couldn't. His whole life, this never happened to him. And then he looks at the fellow and says, "Sir, I want to teach you a lesson which will be important for you for the rest of your life. You should just know that whenever you want to put on a new suit, first you have to take off the old one." Whenever you want to put on a new suit, first you have to take off the old one. That's Elul. Elul, we want to put on a new suit on Rosh Hashanah. We want to begin from scratch. We want to be to really sincerely be mamlich melech malchai hamalach. We want sincerely to have a din tov. Mi yichyo mi yamos. We want to live. We have to realize that in order to put on the new suit of Rosh Hashanah, we have to take off the old suit. And that's the avod of Elul. And in Yitz Hashem, we should all be zochet to have a meaningful Elul, what's left of it. And to move into Rosh Hashanah, have a Ksivach Sima Tova, and a Shnas Chaim B'Shalom.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Sir, excuse me for the time.
Thank you. Okay. So we were talking about being Choresh and Anatzit Shein Anakul. And one other suggestion that we had is that perhaps the idea of connecting the two, not just in the physical sense, but in the malacha sense, comes out a little bit from our Gemara over here, where the Gemara suggests that there's an aspect of kilkul to choresh, that it only becomes a malacha by the fact that it has some meaningful component to it. So perhaps just like mavir and mechabe, and really mechabe as opposed to mavir, and korea and mochek, and all the other malachas which are essentially destructive, but only become constructive when you say that they are almanas for this, so to maybe choresh has some type of a similar structure to it and therefore has an actual almanas need, even though it's not phrased that way. But in any event, this Atzitznakov issue is striking. So I just want to share some other perspectives that were mentioned on this. The Arugas HaBosam, we've mentioned in the past, is a Sefer of Tshuvos, has a number of aras about the malachos within his Tshuvos. So he thought that maybe there was room to be mechalek, because maybe we should look to the Mishkan. That if we're assuming that avos, and again the malachos in general, are going to be defined by the Mishkan, so how are they doing their charisha in the midbar? So presumably, if you say that somehow they were growing out of the desert, so or were growing while they were in the desert, so it must be that you have an Atzit She'eino Nakul kind of situation going on there, because the desert itself is not something that normally grows. So he means by calling that an Atzit She'eino Nakul, you have to assume he either means that they had something external to the desert that was making it grow, or that even if somehow the desert was growing, it's not growing because of the desert, it's growing because of some type of nes, and therefore it's comparable to an otish enonoku, because it's not getting nourishment from the sand, essentially. So therefore, might be room to distinguish. So then nowadays, so let's say Zriya might still be Pater because it's a Lav Kederach, while still the Harisha of Mishkan was in a Atish and Anakul. So that's possibly some room to see things differently. But that has to do with a very technical relationship with how you relate to the history of the Avos. Yes?
Could you use the Burgos Boson Sar for Zriya and that's Anakul also?
Right, you think you could. You think that once you're saying that, that why shouldn't you say that Zriya has the same story? So apparently he's assuming that nowadays, anytime you do something nowadays, it's not Kedera, so then it's also going to be Pater, apparently, even if you're, then we go in the other direction. That if something's, a question was asked about some of the modern technologies that change the way malachas are done, so if you can become chayiv for something all of a sudden because of Kedera, so presumably go in both directions. So then the Zareya might no longer be a, might have only been a temporary, it was never really Kedera, it wasn't Kedera then either, it was only a temporary Kedera, and therefore that's not going to be a model for a long time Zariah, but the Harisha wouldn't necessarily go after that. I'm not so sure it's so convincing either, but I thought there was some room to distinguish based on this. I saw in one sefer that said something which I think really wouldn't necessarily flow. And then he thought that the whole Atzah Shein Anakluv story translates to paralleling this question of whether it's Dafka for the purposes of Zriya or not. If we assume it's a general question here, is Harisha for the purposes of Zriya or is it a Stama Vodas HaKarka? So then you could say that, well, maybe it's not Zriya because there's a Patur of Zriya and an Atzah Shein Anakluv, but maybe it is still Avodas Karka. I would think you probably would say Fakert, that it's definitely not Avodas Karka, because this is not Karka. It's same substance of Karka, but it's been separated from the Karka. So I think it would be very hard to call this specifically Avodas Karka. Maybe it's a type of bone once it becomes, let's say, you have this in your house. But it's hard to call it defined by its Avodas Karka quality. Could be Choresh anyway for the other reasons, but it's hard to say it's Choresh because it's Avodas Karka. Mashain came, if it's about Hachana L'Zriya, so then there's room to say, well then either you can have Zriya and Atzis Nakuv, or you can't have Halachic Zriya, but maybe there should still be room to call that some type of meaningful Zriya for our purposes. Okay, so that's something to think about. We also started to mention that relevant to the whole question of whether it's Avodas Karka specifically or whether it's Hachana L'Zriya has to do with the question of what's the relationship between Sada and Bias. And the fact is that the Gemara tells us that there are some cases here, cases if you flatten out a hole, you take away a tell, you take away some type of a bump in the ground, or you go in the opposite direction. So the Gemara gives these cases where Babayis you're chayiv because of Bona, and outside you're chayiv because of Choresh. And so we raise the question, what's the nature of that relationship? Is that relationship really an absolute relationship? Because you'll say it's Avodas Karka that's defining Choresh. And therefore, essentially, Bias and Sada are really the same thing. It's really Avodas ground, Avodas Karka, and it happens to be the terrain is called Choresh on the outside and is called Bona on the inside. While if we say it's about Hachana L'Zriya, so then that's a harder case to really compare the two. Really the only thing that compares them is that the same type of activities come up in both contexts, but they're really very different types of malachos, and the comparison is more external. So one of the points that emerged from that discussion, which we started to get into, is the question of how do we define Sada and Bias for these purposes? Do they mean their literal translations, a house is a house and a field is a field? Or is a field tied into the Harisha definition? And once you call something Choresh, so once you call something a field, then it has a Zriya definition, it has the ability for Zriya, as opposed to not having that ability. So it's interesting. A couple of points just to spell out in more length from yesterday. So one is that Rav Osner has a tshuva about this. Rav Osner, we mentioned, has comments on Hilchos Shabbos and on Rambam's Hilchos Shabbos in his Tshuvas. So in one of his Tshuvas he makes the following observation, that he thinks that we mentioned yesterday the question of whether or not there's a chiyuv of Charisha in land where it's not Shaykh to Zriah, where the Zriah is not possible. It's not physically susceptible to Zriah. So the general attitude is that it's not Shaykh, that Charisha has to have the potential for Zriah. And the major proof that's brought, the Orzarua brings in others, is from the Gemara in Psachim. The Gemara in Psachim talks about many different acts of Zriah, one different act of Charisha and Zriah that's taking place in a certain area, and the Gemara is considering that there are many different possible averas taking place. So in the context of that Gemara, the Gemara discusses the possibility of the land was a tsunma, the land was rocky land, and the Gemara says Hakrit Yubichai is in Charisha for that. So then the Gemara says because underneath it there was land you could work with, it was fine land, Afer Tichuach. So that sounds like a proof. The Gemara seems to be saying that, oh, you see, there's no Charisha by rocky land, by land that's not able to bring forth growth. So Rav Elazar says he's not sure why that's such a good proof, because the Gemara is talking about a combination of all kinds of different averas that are taking place. So it's not necessarily mukhrach that the Gemara was saying that as far as Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Yontif, that there couldn't be a Charisha for that purpose. It could be that we could, if we're talking about Kiloyim, talking about other Averis that the Gemara is talking about, so then there is a necessary link to growth. So therefore, because the Gemara is lumping together all these different Averis, the Gemara has to have a possibility for all of them. But in the context of the Malacha of Chorish, the Malacha of Shabbos, so it's not necessarily the only way to read that Gemara that it's excluding Sunma from Chorish Shabbos. Hi.
Doesn't it specifically say that you're not going to be chayav over Harisha because it's for Kisui Adam?
Right.
Says, but, so it's specifically talking about Harisha.
Right, but in the Gemara is also mixing together all the different...
No, that's beforehand, but I'm saying the specific question of the Gemara about the ground is about Harisha.
Right, but the Gemara comes into the whole discussion because it's mixing together all the different averes. So therefore, the fact that it has to set these parameters doesn't necessarily exclude the other averes from being the reason. So we have a scenario where we have Zriya coming out of it. So if that's the case, you can't say that it's all about Shabbos. That's basically his point. Just that there's no tzarach to read the Gemara that way. So essentially, he thinks the proof, the reality is more just when the Gemara talks about Sada and Bayis here, that essentially it sounds from the Gemara like essentially it's defined by the Malach, which as we'll see, this is part of what we're trying to figure out here. You can maybe question this. But that the idea, identity of it being Sada or Bayis, it kind of sounds like the Gemara is saying it's basically one or the other, as defined by what Malacha is relevant to it. Which is a point we started to discuss yesterday. Tovia was asking, is there a no man's land? Now, is there an area where, is the Gemara basically giving us two choices and there are more choices, or are there choices in the middle of it, places where you can do this type of activity where it's neither Choresh or Bonen? So his understanding is the Gemara kind of sounds like first we're looking at what you're doing, and then we want to know, is it Choresh or Bona? It depends on where it is. Sounds like it's not going to be Choresh if it's not shy for it to grow. And then it becomes Bona. And he seems to have this understanding that Charisha is defined by the ability to have Zriya, and other than that, it's going to be Bona. Which is an interesting point. That's his way of saying that's a stronger indication that we need a possibility of Zriah. This was also, by the way, it's interesting, this type of relationship also comes out of the Pnei Yehoshua. We mentioned the Pnei Yehoshua yesterday. I don't know if it was easy access to Pnei Yehoshua, if anybody saw it inside, but the Pnei Yehoshua talks about the Tosfos. The Tosfos asks, why is it that the Gemara cares about the order of the Malachos when it comes to Zriah and Choresh, and not about other Malachos which seem to be inconsistent with real life? So Tosfos gives one answer, and the Pnei Yehoshua says, no, the answer is because it's significant that Choresh is after Zoreah, because you would think that since Charisha needs to be in a place where it is Zriah, so therefore it shouldn't count if it's after the Zriah. So Kamash Malon, that it counts there as well. So in the context of saying that, he says that the same act of Charisha, if you're doing it not for the purposes of Zriah, becomes an act of bonus. Apparently saying that it's actually not just the territory that defines it, but it's the intent. You say sada, it's not because you happen to be in the sada, but it's because your intent of doing this is for zriya purposes. If you're doing the same act in a sada, not for zriya purposes, but for purposes comparable to what you would do in the house, then it becomes bonet. It's an interesting point to think about. So essentially, he's saying that it's defined, when the Gemara uses the area to define the difference, that's not really the definition, that's really the clue. And that really the definition has to do with your intent. And intent is what makes it either charisha or bonet. So again, charisha tied in specifically to helping zriya, helping growth. And if it's not that, the same action becomes bonet even when it's outside. Interesting point, we'll talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. I think there were three hands up that were going in this direction. I think Jonathan, Adam, and Daniel, is that correct? Adam, you have your hands up? Okay, so it's Jonathan, Daniel.
So the fact that the Gemara gives us an answer why it's kosher and Eretz Yisrael, adding on that another reason that it's after is for what he's saying?
I think Pinchas' concern is more with the question than with the answer. He's saying that why does the Gemara care about this? So the Malachas can be out of order. Right. The Mechaba and Maver seem to be out of order. It don't seem to correlate to real life. So how come all of a sudden the Mishnah cares that it's out of order? So Tosfos is wondering why the Gemara asked about that also, and they give their answer. And Bnei Yeshua's point is that it's a bigger chiddush to have it out of order, because you could have thought that a Charisha after Zriya is nothing, because Charisha is linked to Zriya. So apparently it's linked to Zriya, yes, but it doesn't mean that you can't have Charisha after Zriya. Charisha after Zriya can also be considered to be Litzara Zriya. So this question of the definition of what's considered to be a bias and what's considered to be a sada. So we saw yesterday the Magen Avraham, which talks about graves, and the Magen Avraham is a little bit ambiguous about this, because the Magen Avraham talks about finishing up a grave on the Yantif. This comes up because there is a practice still today in some communities, historically there was a practice of having funerals at least on Yantif Sheni. The assumption being that the prohibition of Halan Sameis, the Chiyuv of Kvura, is Docha. And if that's the case, so they would do the Levayas, and again, they still do in some places today, Alidei Akum. Essentially, they would have an Akum do this process. So the assumption seems to be that we're not dealing with actual Melachas Daraisa. So what about finishing off the grave? Is that a issue of the malacha of Choresh? So, sorry?
Which direction? The digging of it?
Or the finishing off, let's say. Let's say the graves can be pre-dug, as they often are. So we're talking about filling it up. So is that, let's say, so same to the grave. So is that sounds like what Gemara is talking about over here, is either an av or a tolda, let's say. So is that an act of a tolda of Choresh?
How's that different than burying the body?
Bearing the body. Well, what is bearing the body? I mean,
covering up. You said filling in the grave. What about covering it up? Just covering it up.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Covering it up.
We assume you might just put the yarn in and leave it there
until
after you
dump it. Right. No, but the finishing off the top and flattening it out is going to be l'chora, like these cases in the Gemara of an aspect of chorus.
But how can you bury it to begin with?
How can you put the body in?
How can you put the dirt over it at all?
Putting well, that's essentially what we're talking about. We're talking about putting any dirt right. You put in is right away, not necessarily. What category does that fall into? That's the point. Finishing off a grave is rubbing the ground.
But when you stuff a hole in the ground,
right.
it's a hole in the ground, even if it's a big hole or a little hole.
Correct. Once you're leveling it off, that's where the issue comes up. So the Magen Avraham considers whether that's a deraisa derabbanan. So his first instinct is that that's not a deraisa. Because the assumption seems to be that this is not a maklum zriya. Right, this is not set up to be a place where things are meant to grow, and therefore it's not going to be an aspect of Choresh. However, in the end, it's a little bit ambiguous, because in the end you have the shoot here. So then he considers that maybe Bona is involved, and that why should there be Bona involved? Because since what we're doing here is we are fixing up the cavern. So therefore, maybe that's an aspect of Bonah. Right, he writes here, Mihu Efshir, does that dummy labayish and attacking bazash, shalom yeha mace magula. And then he talks about therefore being machmir because of that. So, how exactly is he defining the difference between Bona and Choresh here? So, there's a little bit of ambiguity, right? Because on the one hand, he's saying, if it's Shayach for Zriya, so then that's Charisha. So if it's not going to be Shayach for Zriya, it's not going to be Choresh, so what is it? So is it by default Bona? Or is it Bona because there is a certain constructive purpose that's happening here? That since you're fixing up the grave, so that's now it's considered to be like a structure. So it's not 100% clear, I think, what he's getting at, whether that's kind of automatically by default Bona, whether there is a significance that makes this Bona. The Egletal assumes, not talking about this necessarily, but Egletal assumes that there is essentially a automatic either-or situation, that the definition of Soja is that it is a Makum Zriya, something that is set up for Zriya is called a Soja, and something that's set up for anything else, essentially, any other type of usage of humans, is called a Bias. Says, for the most part, it says almost everything is one or the other. It's very hard to escape from this definition. He says it could be there is a, you have like the very soggy land where you can't plant in it, and you'll, it's like quicksand, you can't do anything in it, can't come into it, and you can't plant in it. So in theory, you could find some area that may be excluded from both, but for the most part, it's going to be essentially one or the other, because either it's Oymed Lizriya, in which case it is Shayach for Choresh, or it is Omed for usage of people, in which case it is Shayach for Binyan. You find this issue, by the way, if you learn Erevin. This comes up also, the difference between land that is used for people and land that is used for plants, and the effect that has on the Eruv is an issue that comes up there as well. Okay. Fine. So far, so good. So in terms of this function of Zriya and Harisha, in terms of Harisha being something that's for the purpose of Zriya, so this could also be relevant to figuring out the whole sugya on that vase and the vase, which has implications in a lot of directions. And when the Gemara talks there about a machlokas, it's not 100% clear, by the way, this is a girsa question, who's involved in this machlokas, whether it's Rabba and Rava, which has major implications for how psak flows out of that. But the machlokas and the Gemara Moed Katan Dav Beis and the Beis between Rav Yosef and somebody in terms of what is the proper categorization for watering plants or for weeding the land. So according to one opinion, they are both toldos of Zareya, and according to the other opinion, they're both toldos of Choresh. And what does the Rambam do? Rambam splits them, right? So it turns out that Zareya is, that Mashke is Zareya, and Menachesh is Choresh. So this prompts all the discussion of Nosei Kelim and others about why is he apparently deviating from the path in the Gemara, where the Gemara does link the two. So it seems to be that he feels compelled to do that. It seems to be that he feels that the definitions push them in this way. So what is there about, let's say, Menachesh that makes it more Choresh than Zareya, according to the Rambam? Right, so it seems that if you say the Rambam's interest is in enhancing the land, so then we could probably see how Menachesh fits into that definition. The question is also, so why doesn't watering the ground fit into that definition? Seems to be that you have to say that's less than sort of working on the ground, that's more about providing nutrition to the plants, and that somehow the function in the tzura differs significantly from Menachesh, which is more land based. Is that what you wanted to say?
I was gonna say it's not so far to say that removing weeds, you're cleaning out the field, you don't say water the ground, you water the plants.
Right. You see, so therefore, it's less ground, because you're not interested in wet ground, you're interested in wet plants. It could be. But it also seems to reflect, and you may see that the Tosus there, the Orzeruah got involved in this also, about the whole question of what's motivating that machlokas, right? Is that machlokas after the maisa, or is it after the machshava, basically, that you're interested in what you're doing, or you're interested in what you are trying to bring about? And Rishonim suggests that that might be what's behind this issue, and that it's an issue brought up more explicitly in the Gemara Menachos in a different context, to figure out whether that context is relevant there. There the Gemara talks about somebody who is fishing on Shabbos. And it happens to be there's also a baby drowning in the river. So he throws his net into the river and he pulls out both the baby and the fish. So it was an act of pikuach nefesh. But his motivation could have been to fish. So what are we more interested in? Are we interested in the fact that he saved a life, or are we more interested in the fact that he did this act as a malacha? Which, by the way, comes up as a, just parenthetically, you know, it's a serious halachic shaila whether or not pikuach nefesh needs kavana, which has major nafkaminas that, let's say you have to go to the hospital on Shabbos, so you call up the hospital, you call up the taxi service, let's say, and you say, I need a taxi, quick, get me to the hospital, emergency. So they say, okay, we have two drivers on staff. We have Mr. Goldberg, and we have Mr. Christian. Who do you want? So the question is, you could say, well, I want Mr. Goldberg, because Mr. Goldberg is driving around on Shabbos anyway. He's apparently on staff working as a taxi driver. So better he should be driving you, it's pikuach nefesh, rather than he should be driving other people. Think, okay, so since he's working anyway, I'll happen to do pikuach nefesh, that'll save him for the Chil Shabbos. But maybe it's not going to save the Chil Shabbos, because maybe the Chil Shabbos needs to be, pikuach nefesh needs to be done with Shem pikuach nefesh, in which case his activity is not going to be any less of a malacha. He doesn't know that's what's going on. It's not going to be any less of a malacha than it would be otherwise, so maybe that's not going to help. So that's actually practical halachic issue that comes up. So that's touched upon a little bit by that Gemara that raises that issue, are we interested in the mice, are we interested in the machshava? So that has some relevance here. It's a question, how relevant? The Rishonim bring it in. You could talk about whether or not it's perfectly relevant, because it's important to recognize that there is a difference between what's going on there and what's going on in Moed Katan. Moed Katan, the Gemara says, we got these toldos here. Presumably, something is a toldo. These actions are a toldo of some malacha. And we want to know, what malacha is it a toldo of? Well, the Gemara Menachos, we want to know, somebody did this, is he chayav? So in terms of the whole concept of being chayav or something and your intent, so that's one level of going into what he actually did versus what he was thinking about. While we're talking about a tolda, so the premise of a tolda is that it has some comparison to the av, so we want to know, where are we looking for the comparison? Are we looking for the comparison in what you're trying to bring about? Or are we looking for the comparison in terms of what you are doing? So with that background, so the Gemara says that we want to know what's our main point of tangency here between these actions and possible malachas. So if the Rambam's going to say that Menachesh is Choresh, so perhaps it also then is relevant to what is Choresh. Right? If Choresh is about weakening the land, like Rashi would say, so then it's not necessarily going to help so much to put this in this category. But if it's about Avodas Karka, whether it's for the purposes of Zriya or not, but it's about Avodas Karka, so then we see more why the Rambam is pushed in that direction, and then we have to make the chiluk we mentioned a few minutes ago between Zoreya and Choresh. While if you were to say that it's about soft Choresh is normally about softening the land, so then you wouldn't necessarily put Menachesh in the Choresh camp. So then what would you say? What would you say if it's not going to be in the Choresh camp? So it's nothing, or it goes back to Zoreh? So you'd have to, since the Gemara doesn't give you another option, right? Presumably it goes back to Zoreh. But it's interesting, this is an issue the Gemara there picks up on, is that the whole assumption, it sounds like from the Gemara, like it's either or. Right? The Gemara asked that question, because our Gemara, Ayin Gimel Mibayz, sounds like it's not either or, but rather you could be both. The Gemara talks about Zolber V'sarach Le'isim, that if you prune a tree, and you're also interested in taking the wood, so then potentially it is both. So why is that not the case in the Gemara Moed Katan? Right? The Gemara asked that question. But the Gemara doesn't give a real answer to the question, so the Rishonim talk about what the possible answer is. that what's the difference between our Gemara where you're chayiv to and that Gemara where it sounds like it's either or? Because again, if it didn't fit, let's say you have the Rambam say, if it didn't fit the Chorish, and so then what would you say? Okay, so then it goes back to being Zareh, it's got to be one or the other, or then you would drop it. So there are many different approaches to why that Gemara is different. One approach that is around, some suggest, is that to keep in mind that we're talking about toldos versus avos, which is a very significant difference. And this perhaps reflects on the whole toldo question of where toldos come from. That avos, things that were in the Mishkan, so if you happen to do two or three different avos at once, so then you are transgressing against the avos from the Mishkan two or three times. But when it comes to a tolda, so a tolda, apparently, if you assume, for example, that Chazal figured out what the toldos are based on there were certain actions that they felt didn't seem to be permissible on Shabbos, and therefore they then assigned them to malachos that were comparable. So there was no need to assign them to two malachos. If there's one malacha that's comparable, okay, so then Chazal could identify this as being prohibited min haTorah. They're just identifying it as min haTorah. They're not creating the issur, they're pointing out that it's in that category. So there's no need for us to assign it to two different categories. They could assign it to one, but if it's not that one, so then presumably it's the other. Okay, so that's it's going to have other ramifications. Also, when we get back to Zomer B'Tzarech La'Eitzim, which we'll talk about in the context of Malacha Sheinu Tzricha L'Gufa, but that's relevant to that as well. Another issue that we touched upon, and you could expand upon a little bit more, is this whole difference between Ripui Ara and Avodas Karka in general. So if we see Avodas Karka as a broader category, but maybe also being for the function of Zriya, so you could also ask, how immediately does it have to be possible for you to do the Zriya? That if we say that there is a Zriya connection, it doesn't work in a Sadeh that's not Zriyable, but what if it's a step or two away from being Zriyable? So it sounds like from some of the malachos that the Rambam includes that anything that's going to be on the path towards Zriya, even if you still need things done in the middle, that's also going to be considered Charisha. Because some of the actions that he brings about, and the Yerushalmi also sounds like this, the Yerushalmi which talks about taking away rocks. Right? So if you have ground that's covered up by rocks, so presumably you have to take away the rocks before you can even start softening the ground. So here, it's not just that it's not the act of softening the ground itself, but you still need softening the ground in the middle. So there are those who understood from those other Rishonim that from the Rambam of the Rishalmi that anything part of the whole process, even significantly before, during, or after, is going to be a active Chorish. And that Rashi, who by focusing specifically on softening the ground, is saying that that is what Chorish is, and that's also when Chorish is possible. Chorish is only possible when that's all that's left. If you need to do something else before softening the ground, so even if it was let's say something a precursor to softening the ground, that wouldn't be good either. Right? So let's say if I have hard ground, so I need to shovel off the top and then soften what's left. So maybe you could have said that's all part of softening the ground. So it doesn't sound like that from Rashi, because when Rashi talks in the different Rashis here, when he talks about softening the ground through the digging, so he seems to emphasize also that the ground that you are shoveling is considered to be itself soft. So why don't we just say you're shoveling the ground so that you can then get the shovel to shovel the ground, so you can soften the ground. So apparently Rashi understands that it's not just about softening the ground being chorish, but that until you have the ability, until you're up to that step, you don't really have chorish. That's the point the Eglei Tal makes within Rashi. So there are those who question that. We could say, like we mentioned yesterday, in addressing a different point of the Eglei Tal, that maybe Rashi and the Rambam really agree that this is about preparing for Zriya, and the Rambam seeing it in a broader picture, and Rashi seeing it in a more limited sense, that it's only this specific maisa of softening the ground. And therefore, Rashi is just more committed to it being one specific action rather than seeing it in terms of function. But as long as you have both parts, as long as you have softening the ground and the preparation for Zriya, then maybe even Rashi would agree that you have this act going on. So therefore Rashi here, when he mentions you're softening the ground, he just feels that's necessary to explain as part of the process, because he thinks that's essentially a necessary component. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that you're up to that stage, nor does it necessarily have to be that you're doing it in the same chep. So we mentioned yesterday, the Egle Tal was concerned that if you're separating the ground, you're shoveling up the ground, but the ground that's soft is not the ground that you're planting in. So he had an approach that maybe you say the ground underneath becomes softer, and he thought that was doche. So we suggested yesterday, and it's consistent with this point as well, that if we have both components, if we have the act of softening ground and is preparing for Zriya, so for Rashi, maybe that's enough. It doesn't necessarily have to matter that you are going to be doing them in different pieces of dirt, so to speak. However, in terms of the Raya from the Yerushalmi, so the Sefer Talmud Lachos, so good that he points out, that there is room to see that Yerushalmi might not be talking about a full-fledged Choresh, and may actually be talking about Nisa Derabanan. He quotes to that effect the Machzor of Ram. The Machzor of Ram was of Avram Steinberg. There is a well-known rabbi named Avram Steinberg today. He's a medical ethics expert. He is their grandson, or the great-grandson, of the Machzor of Ram, who was also named Avram Steinberg. So in his Chuvus, Machzor of Ram maintains that what the Yerushalmi is talking about is a drabanan of Choresh, and is not the actual Choresh. Okay, we're just about out of time. I said we'd be out by 12 on Tuesday, so we still have a couple of major points to discuss for tomorrow. Among the things that we want to talk about, just so we have the right focus, is we want to talk about this Gemara about Chofer Vein Tzarech L'Guma. Chofer Guma Vein Tzarech that if you are digging and you do need the dirt rather than not needing the dirt, so this Gemara, which touches upon Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, so a lot of that we'll discuss when we talk about Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, but the aspects of it that are relevant to defining what Choresh is, we'll try to finish that off tomorrow, and also the whole discussion about. About the Rambam and the Ramban, about using animals, we'll have to get to that as well. Just one more point about this Menachish and about the Rambam, about whether it's Zoreo or Choresh. So some asked me during Seder that if the Gemara and Moed Katan does seem to connect Choresh to Rifui Ara, so what does the Rambam do with that? Does the Rambam deal with that Gemara? So we mentioned yesterday that the Rambam has the Gemara in Tav Gimel and Rashi has the Gemara in Moed Katan, Dav Beis and Beis. So what does each do with each other's Gemaras? So we mentioned that some people during Seder, the Rambam doesn't necessarily have to see that as all of Choresh, as an aspect of Choresh. There are those who suggest that maybe the Rambam sees it as Machlokas HaSugis, and that maybe he feels that therefore the Gemara and Shabbos wins over the Gemara Moed Katan, and he therefore essentially already, we have to say that he's ignoring the Gemara Moed Katan to a certain extent, because he's splitting the difference where the Gemara says that they're lined up. Two actions are either Zoreh or Choresh, and he splits the difference. Already he's deviating from that Gemara and Moed Katan. We've got to figure out why. So well, one possibility is that he thinks it's in the focus between Shabbos Kuv Gimel and Moed Katan Dav Bey, then he passes like Shabbos. Could be. Okay, so that's Hashem. Tomorrow we will finish up Choresh, and we'll finish the